Welcome to the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy. This is the place for everything related to Amazon private label and e-commerce. Learn exactly what you need to start or scale your business. Get insights from the top industry experts who will discuss the latest trends and best practices in the world of Amazon. From choosing products and sourcing from a supplier to setting up your Amazon account and marketing your business, you will hear it here. Let's get started. Here is your host, Vincenzo Toscano.
Hello, guys. Welcome to another episode of the E-Commerce Lab by eComsy, the place of everything related to Amazon FBA, private label, and e-commerce. My name is Vincenzo Toscano, your host, founder, and CEO of eComsy. And today we bring another special guest. His name is JC, and he's a founder and CEO of Decommoditize, which is an agency that is specialized on helping brands to figure out how to differentiate in the market, which I think is key, especially in 2024 with so much competition, so much saturations in marketplaces such as Amazon. If you don't really understand how to make your brand different and really differentiate, you're definitely going to struggle. That's why I wanted to bring JC. He's an expert when it comes to that. He even wrote a book, which then we're going to talk about how you guys can find it. JC, it's a pleasure to have you on the show, my friend. How you doing? Welcome.
Good, good. Thank you so much. Thanks for having me, and looking forward to chatting about the big bad Amazon and how we can stack the deck and make it more powerful for us.
How to be a super villain in Amazon. Exactly. That's awesome. So, Jesse, tell us a little bit about you for those that might not know you. Like, tell me a little bit about your background, how you founded your company. You have a very interesting background as well. So, how everything started, how you became a supervillain when it comes to marketing.
Absolutely. So, started in my mom's basement just designing websites. And that grew over the past 25 years, you know, building an office, building a staff. And when COVID hit, kind of took a step back, shrunk down a little bit, and I kind of got demoralized, right? I was always in the grow phase. And, you know, I think a lot of people during this time, they did a lot of soul searching. What do they really want to be when they grow up? And I kind of look back at like my 25 years and what were the most rewarding projects that I ever worked on. And it turned out that a lot of them were just things that I got to use, you know, my eclectic tastes and kind of take.
I love it. Your background is amazing. Let me tell you that. Like, you have such an amazing taste.
I took preferably the most boring products in the world and injected them with so much life that they had like their own personality. So I said, I don't know what that's called, but that's what I want to do when I grow up, right? So I kind of fell into the world of commodities, right? The most boring things in the world that people usually buy based on price. And I said, how can I help these people that are currently like racing to the bottom to get the cheapest, absolute, you know, bottom price, and kind of restore that pride they used to have when they started their business and like always providing the best customer service, the best product, the best quality. So I came up with Decommoditize, which I guess wasn't a word because Microsoft Word kept spell checking me. So I actually went and trademarked the word Decommoditize. So I have a word in the English language now. So just started building this brand. I'll get into how the supervillain idea came into play. But yeah, I mean, a lot of business books out there, they tell you, go out, find your differentiator and tell the world about it. But they don't tell you how. It's incredibly, incredibly difficult. So I got tired of, you know, all the basic boring business books out there that just kind of fell short. So I tried to figure out, you know, how do you actually differentiate? You know, let's create a process. Let's make it scientific, even though it's in some perspectives, you know, wacky or whatever. How do we actually manufacture, you know, that cult status for a brand? And that's what the book's all about.
Love it. What a journey. Yeah, I think, you know, differentiation is something that, because I go to a lot of events and meetups and stuff, like people, like they know the basics behind that. But in honest truth, like I would say most of the brands, when we audit or analyze that, unfortunately not really tapping into that. I feel it, first of all, because I feel it's difficult. Like if you don't really have a passion for the niche you're selling into, I feel differentiation to some extent is like a second nature to a passion you have towards a specific niche, like you really need to understand the avatar to really think outside the box and come up with solutions. So it's tough. And that's where I think if you are a founder that only see a brand from the commercial perspective, but don't see as what is the actual value you bring to the life of your clients in terms of, you know, lifestyle and the community around and all of that, that's where most people struggle. So I guess let's start with the foundation differentiation, like where you as a founder, I guess if you're lacking that kind of inspiration to come and think outside the box, you should start in the first place to find those elements that can allow your brand to really stand out. How I even get started, like what do you advise on that? Yeah,
perfect question, common question. So I created something called the universe of differentiation in the book, right? So it's basically a universe of 12 different planets. And, you know, when people think of differentiation, they think, you know, oh, I got to wear crazy clothes and I got to be wacky. It's not the case. So there's 12 different planets on how big brands or small brands throughout history have successfully decommoditized themselves. And that includes, you know, Steinway, Tiffany, Rolex, all the way down to G.I. Joe figures, right? So it's like the total spectrum of different ways that you could differentiate yourself. So if you're not comfortable with, you know, being comedy or being outlandish or being the, you know, the guy that stands out from the crowd, there's plenty of other ways to do it. And we provide those examples as well. So, you know, here's one planet. Here's how a couple of brands have successfully differentiated themselves using that planet. And if that's not for you, you move on to the next one. So we tell people to find kind of 3 out of 12 planets that really feel authentic to you. And then from there, we dive in a little deeper and we figure out, okay, what do the people living on that planet look like? And what do they respond to? And is it actually in your brand's DNA to live on the planet? So awesome. I think we created a nice process to kind of help people that are like completely, you know, deer in headlights. It's a great start.
Interesting. So now, out of curiosity, why 12 planets and not 6 planets? Like how you came up with that in the first place? That's very interesting. So
it is very interesting. So I think we started with 15. We broke it down to 12, right? We don't want to make it too monumental of a task. So we broke it down to 12, and we're always like saying, almost like our universe, right? Is Pluto a planet? Yes, no, we don't know. So we have another planet that's like, we're really, you know, tempted to bring in, make it a 13. But we found that the top 12, that's like a great starting point. And if those 12 don't fit for you, there's in the book, there's 5, we call them marketing mischief tactics, where if you don't want to go full into differentiation, there's 5 things that some big brands have taken advantage of, but nobody's really, jumped on it. So if that's not for you, we got 5 more for you. And then maybe in book number 2, if it comes out, there'll be another, at this point, another 4 or 5 planets joining the universe.
Good. So now from the perspective of a founder, when you're getting started and you have, as you mentioned, all these planets, which it would be interesting to also high level tap into those, like what would you say then from your perspective, the planet that would give maybe the best chance towards, not the best chance, but that spark of creativity, right? Because I mean, there's different verticals you can go from here. And I guess giving that first small step is what really is all about, like creating the momentum. From there, you create that kind of behavior that will allow you to really create some kind of consistency that is key for the brand, right? So tell us, like, Hale, what are these 12 planets? And I guess what we can do with these questions, bring it to in terms of simplicity, because again, I know this can go very deep, but high level, what are some of the thought process behind the 12 planets? Like what are the foundations?
So we actually, I kind of set it up like a game, right? So we put the universe out in front of the client. I give them a set of chips and I give me a set of chips. And I kind of explain what the planets are and they kind of put their chip down on what they think. And then I counter and I put my chips as to where I think they are. And usually the client is wrong. I mean, everyone wants to be the biggest. Everyone wants to be the most respected or, you know, have heritage and be the oldest, most established. So there's a lot of differentiators. You know, if you don't sell more hamburgers than McDonald's, you're not going to compete on 1 billion served. So it's kind of a game and it's a bit of a debate, but it should be completely authentic. You should never, like, one of the things I hate when the client comes to us and says, you know, we're either small or we're big, we're small, and we want to look like these guys. And these guys are a big company, and they look like this. And that. I don't help people look like other people. I help you look like you, and I put a magnifying glass on it. So don't look to others for inspiration. Have others look to you for inspiration when we're done with the process.
Good. Now, when it comes to differentiation, there are so many also areas you can tap into, because I feel sometimes when people think about differentiation, they only think about, oh, maybe just changing the color or just changing the shape. But let's be honest, there are so many things you can go much deeper. It could be about the community you create around that, the kind of feeling you transmit through your copy and through your images, the persona you have into your branding. It could be price point, it could be lifestyle, it could be so many things. So I guess from your experience that you've been working with differentiation for such a long time now, what are some of the things out of the ones I mentioned, like you feel usually move the needle the fastest? Because as I said, there are many elements that will complement a proper differentiation. But from your point of view, like, have you seen any trends where usually, as an example, you say, oh, actually, when you focus on, let's say, the persona when it comes to the images of your product, that's usually the thing that moves the most. Like, have you identified any kind of elements like that in your experience?
So with, there's no, you know, key North Star, like, okay, I want to go towards this planet. I can give you some of my favorite stories that, sure, are kind of unconventional, right? So one of the planets of differentiation is process, right? So if you have a process of how you make what you do, and it's different, or it's interesting, or it's second to none, your process could be your differentiator, right? So my favorite story in this planet is there's a distillery and they make whiskey, right? Thousands upon thousands of whiskey brands. So they said, hey, we want to bring celebrities in, put their name on the whiskey. Again, everybody's done that, right? So they wanted to work with Metallica. Metallica wanted the same thing. They said, we're not just gonna put our faces on liquor. It's been done a million times. Not interesting. So they actually came up with a really cool process and a really cool story. So they took Metallica, they created what they call the opposite of white noise, which is black noise, right? So it's noise created by Metallica. And they just play it in the distillery on low volume. And the theory is it vibrates the barrels during the distilling process to get that wood flavor in there. So, and it's named after one of their songs, Blackened, right? So it's blackened whiskey. The whole process is overseen by Metallica. It's created with black noise, written by Metallica. So there, you know, if you're a Metallica fan or you're a whiskey fan, that's just a cool story that just sets you miles apart from any other, you know, generic whiskey on the shelf. So your process could be your differentiator. I'm not even a drinker, and I love that story, and I love that.
Yeah.
Product. Yeah.
Yeah. And actually that's such a great story, because and we see that more often now, that especially when it comes to a branding perspective, in terms of when they try to build a story around the brand, I see more often people focusing on sustainability. Like, okay, the process comes from this village in the middle of nowhere that they use no chemicals, no machines, and therefore is more, you know, a better for an environment, but at the same time will help a community. And that definitely, like, I have seen a lot of brands that came out of nowhere that they boom because of that. That mission that I feel you as a consumer feel proud to be part of that mission, right? You're building that kind of, I want to be cool and be actually the guy that when I buy, I don't know, my wallet is made out of leather that is on a village in the middle of India that's supporting thousands of people, as an example, right? So yeah, that's very cool. But I think besides process, and this is something that will be very interesting to also hear your take in differentiation, something I see more often, especially in the e-commerce space, Amazon, people are now shifting more towards also having a unique IP, right? What I mean, like they have patents, or they try to really come up with something that is fancy, because we both know, especially on Amazon, one of the big issues, like, you get copied very fast, or your manufacturer undercut you and goes directly to Amazon, and then it's tough for you to really keep the edge. So what is your take on that? Like, when it comes to differentiation, do you feel IP is also something that's playing a big role lately when it comes to that?
Yeah, I mean, IP, every time I dip into it, I get frustrated because it sounds like you have less and less rights, especially overseas. So on one hand, it's wise to pursue an IP, but on the other hand, when, you know, someone overseas copies it and you go to your lawyer, he says, can't do anything. It's like, why did I do this in the first place?
Yeah. no.
But tag teaming your IP with your brand can absolutely help. You know, one of the other planets of differentiation is timing. Right. Mm-hmm. So if you were the first, or you were the original, or you were the originator,
the pioneer.
People want the original as opposed to a knockoff. And they may be able, to warrant paying a premium for the original if handled correctly. So, you know, sometimes competition is good. And if you're the first and you're the biggest and the baddest, you know, having knockoffs just means that you're going to have more eyeballs on your brand because all the knockoffs are marketing as well.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah, I think, IP, it's been a big one because at least from Amazon perspective, I mean, the good news is that at least when you're on a marketplace, it's easier to take, bad competitors down because you have some piece of paper in your hands. But yeah, I agree. Sometimes, even if you got the extra mile, that doesn't guarantee anything in the long term, right? Now, another thing that I'm very curious to also learn in terms of differentiation is how you create also differentiation from the point of view of a community, right? We briefly mentioned the mission, which again, mission, of course, is sustainability and process and all that. But also from a community perspective, we see this, for example, with brands in the fitness space, right? People that buy, for example, Alo, right? It's all about, I want to have these Alo pants and yoga pants and everything. And it's about the trend. It's about being cool and all of that. So I guess that also comes down to differentiation, because now I don't want to use Nike. I want to use Alo because it's cool and everybody in LA, in California uses that, and it's a differentiation point of view. So how you even create that in the first place? Because that seems like, from my perspective, one of the things that from a brand allows you to overcharge, which is what most of these brands are doing. They charge premium for something that is made for pennies in India or China. But at the same time, they have that point of differentiation. So how you create that from your experience? Yeah.
So in my opinion, you know, we'll talk about creating a lifestyle brand, right? Yeah. Which is another planet in the universe of differentiation. So when people think of creating a lifestyle brand, they think like, oh, I want this to appeal to as many people as possible. I want everybody wearing my Lululemon or whatever.
Exactly.
When it's actually the opposite, right? So when you're creating a lifestyle brand, you actually want to cut out as many people as you can. That way you get that core audience that say, oh my God, someone actually gets me, right? So if you're just like, oh, we're yoga and we're comfortable and this and that. But if you come out and say like, hey, do you experience this, 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 and this? And a majority of the audience says, no, that's not for me. But a small audience says, yes, you guys get me. That's how you're going to create the cult following. And I say, you know, one of the benchmarks, right? If you create a strong enough brand, would someone get your brand tattooed on them without being asked? Because they just feel like, these guys get me, right? So yeah. When you're creating a lifestyle brand, you want that hotness. Don't think about appealing to everyone. Think about appealing to the smallest amount of people possible. And getting so niche that these people say, oh my God, someone finally gets me. There's all these other yoga pants on the market, but these guys speak to me.
Yeah, that's key. I think it's also about what we went down at the beginning, which I feel a lot of people really struggle to define the persona in the first place. They launch a brand, but they don't really know what they're targeting in terms of, okay, I'm targeting certain age, certain ethnicity, certain location. They don't really have a clue. They just go very broad. And I feel that's where people struggle. Like they don't basically funnel their focus towards a specific audience. And therefore, it's tough to design a lifestyle in the first place if you don't know who you're talking to, right?
Yeah, I mean, so, that's a great example. So you have your avatar, which is good, but almost as important is you have your non-believer, right? So who are the people that our product is not for, right? They would turn and run away. And that actually makes the avatar feel even stronger, like, this is for me and it's not for them. I'm not those guys. This is where I belong. So having two avatars, your believers and your non-believers.
That's good. So now, so far we have talked about Lysa, the processes, IP. What other, you will say, planets and type of differentiations are really key that, or maybe that are very like specific that you feel like they are key, but you don't see a lot of people implementing? Like, do you have any ideas that you would like to share as well regarding that?
Well, you'd ask me like what's kind of like the biggest, right? So the biggest, broadest one is what I call approachability. Mm-hmm. We live in the world of social media, right? So we have an endless ability to get content out there. So, you know, going back to the distillery market, which we're very big into, we find that, you know, when you go to a bar and you ask for a drink, many people, they're not like, you know, hey, I want this with this liquor and this one, you know, they don't know enough. They're not educated enough, or wine is a great example. Mm-hmm. And they kind of feel intimidated to ask for something by a specific name. So what we do is we create approachability. And I think in the age of social media, we have this ability to say, hey, we know, you know, MP3 players are confusing. You don't know megabytes and megahertz and you know, mm-hmm. compression. Apple comes out and says, here's the iPod. It's purple. It has all your songs on it. And you can just walk into a store and say, give me an iPod, as opposed to, I'm looking for an MP3 player, and the guy asks you questions and you feel stupid. So making that approachability, making it so simple and so stupid that anyone could appreciate it. So if you have a product, you know, a liquor, you know, specifically a B2B, you know, something that's confusing or intimidating, just breaking it down and making it, you know, with social media, look, we want to be entertained. So you're putting your post up right underneath something like a Netflix that has the next big mm-hmm. series. And your post is not going to look that great. You know, it's not going to get that much attention. But if you're playing on that level and you're able to entertain, if you're going for the approachability planet, you know, it's a wide open playing field. Create a persona, create an identity, create a spokesperson, a cartoon, a mascot, something that, you know, just breaks down. I mean, the insurance company, I don't know what it's like overseas, mm-hmm. but nobody talks about insurance. It's Flo. Yeah. It's the Geico lizard. It's the Geico, you know, the caveman. Nobody talks about insurance because it's intimidating and it's hard. I want to go with the Geico. I want to go with the Gecko company. I want to go with Flo. I want to go with State Farm and the, you know, the guy that plays J.K.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's cool. Now, I also feel when it comes from differentiation, something that could be also very important, and maybe you can share some insights about this, is sometimes doing the first place before you even launch the brand, some market analysis, what we call a testing your audience in the first place. Like, there's a lot of this tool that you can basically put different perspectives of, you know, your logos, how your product will look like, price points and everything, and you could target specific personas to then identify what is ideally within these services where you test 1,000, 2,000, 5,000 people's sample in terms of audiences, what they would prefer before you launch it. And therefore, I guess you could kind of figure out the differentiation point of view before investing a significant amount of money. So is that something you also recommend, like doing this kind of test? Or if not, what kind of procedure you would recommend?
Yeah, so we don't typically work with startups. You know, startups typically, you know, have rose-colored, you know, outlook on the future. They think everything's going to work. So with decommoditized, we say a great client is usually someone that had their teeth kicked in, right? So they've been doing it for a while, and they just see they got to lower their prices because there's so much competition. So we kind of come at it from an underdog perspective as opposed to a startup that's looking to like, hey, we're going to blow the roof off this place. And, you know, when you're in that position, you're a little less vulnerable. You're a little less willing to take risks. You think your new product is going to be, you know, a game changer. So you don't really have to, there's no accountability there. You're just like, I'm going to go and this thing's going to catch fire and we're going to shoot to the moon. So not to say that we wouldn't work with startups, but we typically work with people that have season their business and been through the ringer a little bit, looking for an alternative.
Awesome. That's cool. Now, I would say another question people also wonder when it comes to differentiation is how, when you implement a strategy like this that you're trying to make your product different, you also can make it different enough, but at the same time not making adaptable to multiple regions, right? Because let's say you're a brand that wants to go global, certain factors that you might consider into your differentiation may have conflicts for different reasons. It could be because of culture, religion, political reasons, so many things, right? So when you start to go global, that's where differentiation really kicks in another gear when it comes to complexity. So what is your advice from that perspective? You really want to become a global brand. Like, is there any extra elements you have to consider as well?
I mean, it would be impossible to find a global differentiator that rings true,
yeah,
you know,
exactly,
starting with pen and paper, right? So on a kind of a microcosm, we deal a lot with the alcohol industry. And just in that industry, just in the US, this state says yes, this state says no, you can ship here, you can't ship here. You know, some people hate alcohol, you know, some people love it, it's their hobby. So, you know, just kind of having enough foresight, not too far into the future where you're going to kind of like say, yeah, we can't do that. You know, kind of pick your plan, build your brand within that ecosystem. And then, you know, from there, you can kind of say, well, this, you know, our current brand would go great in Japan, but it would be horrible in Italy, and kind of start taking over the world. And you can kind of start morphing your differentiator based on your plan for global domination.
Awesome. That's cool. Yeah, because I get that question a lot. Like, people say, yes, I really know what is the perfect avatar in Canada, but what about in Italy? Will it be different? How do I adapt? So it's something I know founders struggle. So it's key to take that in consideration. Awesome. So now to start concluding, I guess another thing I would like to also hear from you is differentiation. I feel also, from my perspective, is something that will evolve over time, because I guess as you launch the brand and you figure out different things, you know, you have to adapt with the market, otherwise you will stay behind, right? And we have seen that with many big brands. So how, now, from that perspective, is there any kind of advice or strategy you recommend to always include some kind of flexibility within that differentiation? Like, how you do that as well? Yeah,
I mean, it's a great question, and it's an ever-evolving game, right? So to illustrate, you think back in the 80s, airlines, you chose ticket based on price, right? I didn't have loyalty to one airline or another. And then all of a sudden, one airline said, hey, what if we come up with something called frequent flyer miles, and we reward our, you know, loyal customers? And their sales went through the roof. And then every single airline said, well, we're going to do frequent flyer miles too. And then they went back down. So there's always going to be, you know, the differentiator in the group, and then everybody's going to jump on, and then we're going to go back down here. And then someone's going to be a genius and come up with another differentiator, and then the market's going to catch up. So it's a constant, luckily it's not like this, it's over time, and everybody, you know, everybody's slow to catch up. But if you're an innovator in your field, you can always be that market leader and let everybody just continue to play catch up to you.
Awesome. That's great. So I think, Jesse, any last words of encouragement when it comes to, you know, differentiation, or any last tip you would like to share so we can conclude today's episode?
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like a big lift. I mean, the theme of marketing for supervillains is that you're new into a market, entering a market, especially when there's a big player, a big brand, they're kind of like the superhero, right? They have public favor, they've got big muscles, which in marketing equates to big budgets, and you can't come in and go head to head with them. As a small guy, you kind of have to think like a supervillain, right? You can't use your muscles, you can't use your money, so you have to outsmart the super brand or the superhero in the market. So a lot of the things in the book are for, you know, people that don't have all the resources in the world, and kind of figuring out ways to rewrite the rules of the game to topple the superhero in the market. So don't let it be intimidating. We stayed on a pretty technical level here. Yeah. It can be a lot of fun. That's why I'm in it. You know, you can tell from my background. Yeah. I like to have fun. So
you love it.
check out the book, and if you have any questions about differentiating yourself, shoot me a line.
Awesome. So tell us where people can find this book.
easiest place to find it is in your stomping grounds, Amazon.
Awesome. Yep. Very cool. Very cool. And in case people want to, you know, reach out to you personally or maybe work with you, can you also tell us like maybe your email or where people can find you? Yeah.
Yep. So it's a little bit hard to spell, but decommoditized.com. We got all the misspellings. So even if you spell it wrong, you're gonna find me. And all my socials are there, Marketing Supervillain on Instagram, TikTok. I'm a frustrated filmmaker, so I tend to put a lot of special effects in my YouTube videos. So you can find me on YouTube.
I saw your website. It was like a star being revealed. Yeah.
So, yeah, I like to have fun. And, I like to put science behind it as well. So we can have as much fun as possible.
Cool. Thank you so much, Jesse. So it's been a pleasure. I appreciate your knowledge. And I'm sure people are going to get a ton of value out of your book and everything you've been sharing out there. So wish you all the best and let's keep in touch, man. Yeah. Thank you so much.
Thanks so much, Magenta.
See you, man. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to The E-Commerce Lab by Ecomsy. Be sure to subscribe so you don't miss an episode. While you are at it, we would appreciate it if you could leave an honest rating and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you listen. That will make it easier for others to find out about the show and benefit from it. Want more? Visit our website at www.ecomsy.com, where you can get your first consultation for free. Or find us on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn at ecomsy.